Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Go to China, they said. Find out for us what's really going on. What does it look like when an economy turns upside down? I said, sure, I can do that. I used to live there. I know China. And then I got here.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have just landed at Chongqing-Jiang Bei Airport. Local time is 6:10 p.m.
Live from Chongqing, China, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, helping nearly 3 million members achieve financial security and give back to their communities and congregations. Thrivent.com. Marketplace China reports are supported by Best Buy, building a global network to help enrich lives through technology, innovation, and opportunity. Best Buy.
In the Chinese Republic of Chongqing, I'm Li Kai. Live from Chongqing in the People's Republic of China, I'm Kai Rizdal. We are live this week from the future, and here's what it sounds like. School kids, old men playing mahjong, fancy restaurants in Shanghai, just some of the sounds of China. It is Monday where you are, early, early Tuesday morning here in Chongqing, by some measures, the biggest city in the world. We have come to China because a generation from now, or maybe less, China is on pace to have the world's number one economy. Already, it's the world's biggest manufacturing center. Companies from all over the globe are addicted to China's cheap labor. The economic changes that are happening here and the breakneck pace they're happening at are changing the world. So we'll be here for a week looking at those changes, the pitfalls and the possibilities. How much is real? How much is hype? Can it last? And what does it mean for you? Go to the central train station in any Chinese city, like the one I went to in Shanghai, and you'll get a pretty good picture of what might be the biggest change that's happening in this country. Over there are some wealthy Chinese on their way to a business meeting out of town, talking on their cell phones and clearly in a hurry. Middle-class families waiting for a relative or couriers making delivery. But look at the people on the edges of the crowd. The ones sitting on piles of luggage, sometimes nothing more than a collection of plastic sacks. They're China's migrant workers, the mobile poor, and they're moving from the countryside to cities on a scale no one has ever seen before. Tens of millions of people looking for work that will lift them out of a poverty most of us can barely imagine. They spend maybe 15 kwai, a couple of dollars, for a ride to the nearest big city, sometimes days away. And when they get there, they haul their possessions to the plaza out front and wait for work for as long as it takes. This guy, a month. It sounds and looks scattershot, like it can't possibly be a viable economic system, all this excess labor on the move. But in a country where the economy's been growing by more than 9% a year for almost three decades, migrant workers and the trains they ride are a key part of China's growth. And so all the migrant trains wind up in the same place. Cities, where the work is. Marketplace's Scott Tong caught up with one migrant here in Chongqing.
There are no bikes in Chongqing. The steep roads here make pedaling worthless. Think San Francisco, plus a maze of stone staircases winding into the hills. Out of this terrain, a rather unique occupation has sprung up, the human porter. Carriers for hire roam the city, hustling for business. For a price, they'll tote anything, a basket of vegetables, a suitcase, even a refrigerator. All it takes is a bamboo pole across the shoulders and rope for fastening. Of course, manual labor falls at the low end of the totem pole, But 42-year-old Xu Shiqing considers it a dream job. He makes $10 a day. Like all porters, he came from the countryside.
Life is better here, more relaxed. I take jobs city people don't want, and it's easy. Back on the farm, I would lose several pounds every harvest season. Here, I sit and wait for business. I make good money and send it to my family.
Best thing about city life? The food.
Back home, you can only eat what you grow. Here, I can afford whatever I want. Here, the fish is cheaper and tastier. Not a lot of bones inside.
Xu takes short, quick steps. He stands about 5'8". Weight, 140. Body fat, maybe. All across China, migrants like him are toiling away. They do construction. They work factories. They cut hair. Migrants fill one out of every three jobs in cities.
It's a very natural process that people move to cities where they can make two or three times as much income.
David Dollar runs the World Bank's China office. He says it's hard to fathom the scale and the pace of migration.
About 200 million people have already moved to cities in China during a 20-year period of economic reform. And that's comparable to what happened in all of Western Europe over a century, or comparable to what happened in the United States in about 70 years between about 1860 and 1930.
Xu Shiqing, the porter, came to Chongqing in the early 80s. Before that, people were forced to stay in their home provinces. But President Deng Xiaoping undid that as part of economic reforms.
Deng Xiaoping is the greatest man. He improved everyone's lives. His economic reforms benefited all the farmers.
He is a huge fan of Deng Xiaoping, in part because he's from the same town, Guang'an in southwestern China. He took me there. It takes 2 hours by bus, the nice kind, with bucket seats and a TV showing a Hong Kong gangster flick. What a difference 20 years makes.
I first came to Chongqing on a train. It wasn't very comfortable. But now buses compete with trains, so everything is much better quality.
We get to the village, and Xu shows me all the stuff he's been able to provide with his big city income. There's the water well with the automatic pump. There's the giant vat of rice.
Before the economic reforms, we could only afford noodles. Now my family eats rice every day. We even feed rice to the pigs and dogs, mixed with vegetables and meat. If you just give them rice, they won't eat.
That's right, even the animals are happy. Returning home transforms Xu. The man on the lowest rung in the city is big man on campus in the village. He orders his wife to start lunch. He mocks my questions. I asked him about all the kids' bikes here and whether he ever had one.
I didn't have enough to eat. How could I afford a bicycle? City people.
Then he shows off his new house. A simple concrete structure has replaced the old mud hut. This is the prized possession. It cost $4,000, about 10 years of his savings. There are three bedrooms and one latrine ditch.
Eventually, I'm going to add an upstairs, so it'll look just like the neighbor's house.
I ask him if he needs the extra space. His wife laughs. No, he says, it's just for looks. Just outside his house, a group of healthy-looking girls is jumping rope. A lot of kids live here, and a lot of old people. Most folks in the middle have left for the cities. Xu Shiqing's wife is one of the few to stay behind. She tends the crops, sweet potatoes, wheat, rice, and corn. And she raises their 10-year-old son and their niece. Her parents migrated too.
I do everything. The work is very difficult for a woman. So I hope my son doesn't get stuck in the fields like me. I hope he gets a good education so he can get a better life in the city.
A bunch of village wives cook lunch at a neighbor's house. They stir-fry tofu, chicken, and pig ears in a giant wok. It's 4 feet across. Mr. Xu points to it and says, my wok's bigger. Life is good here. This is the happy face of migration in China. Generally, it's gone well for 20 years. and the government needs it to keep going well, to keep the economy humming. Here's the ideal scenario. More and more farmers ditch the farms for cities, which need their labor. The migrants get rich and start buying stuff, creating more jobs. Andy Rothman is a financial analyst at the brokerage CLSA.
The Chinese government's making a conscious effort to promote urbanization because they recognize that they probably have 200 million too many farm households, and they need to get these people off the land into service or manufacturing jobs. So they're really pushing it.
It's not a sure thing. A small but growing number of migrants is finding city life isn't always kind. They get blamed for crime. They can't always find jobs. And when they do, employers can take advantage of them. Rothman warns if lots of poor people grow disenchanted, watch out.
I think the one statistic that must keep China's leaders up awake at night is that the gap between urban and rural wealth is now wider than it was in 1949 when the Communist Party came to power on the back of unhappy peasants.
To narrow the gap, the government has started a series of programs to smooth the integration for migrants. It's going to take a lot of programs. Xie Lihua runs a nonprofit women's rights center in Beijing.
Migrants step into the cities with no education and no skills. They take jobs no one else wants. And they have no rights. No labor union, no medical insurance, no social services.
Her point is not everyone will tolerate those trade-offs. Xu Shiqing, the porter, does. He's back at work in Chongqing, carrying a box of electric blankets for 2 yuan, 25 cents.
It's a man's job to support his family. If I can't support my family, I'll be sitting at home fighting with my wife.
In Chongqing, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
You can see a slideshow of Chongqing and of the migrant worker that Scott talked to on our website. It is marketplace.org. Out in the streets of Chongqing, by the way, those guys carrying stuff around on their bamboo poles are everywhere. They're known as bongbong. Take a second to give you the lay of the land. We spent last week in Shanghai, 1,000 miles away. We figured it'd be good to know what's happening in one of China's most modern and chaotic cities. And chaotic it is, but in a Western kind of way. By the end of the week, Shanghai felt very familiar. Like, yeah, I could see myself living here. Not so, though, in Chongqing. The chaos here is completely Chinese. We chose this place for a reason. The median income in Chongqing is right at the national average. It sits on China's biggest and most important river, the Yangtze, and the central government is betting it will be able to duplicate the economic success of Shanghai and South China out here. But all you have to do is step outside and you'll see how far there really is to go. Make your way down a steep stone staircase carved out of the hillside, and on either side of you are small shops cobbled together from spare lumber and wallboard. They're incredibly cramped and unbelievably dirty. The food in the sidewalk restaurants is spicy and delicious, even if you're a little bit afraid to think about what you might be eating. An old woman sits on a sidewalk using a foot-powered sewing machine. So, that coat was for a friend, she says, so no charge. Nearby, there's an ad hoc movie theater. A guy puts a bunch of chairs in front of the TV in his shanty and sells tickets. One jiao a piece, just over a penny. Except for me, he tells me, since I'm a foreigner, Lao Wai in Chinese, it'll cost me one kuai, about 12 cents. We'll be here all week, looking at whether those stalls and shops can help China's economy keep growing. Coming up, how fast is too fast?
I used to live in New York, and whenever I go back, I'm so disappointed at how slow things are there. I mean, the same restaurant's been hot for almost a year. That's crazy here. It wouldn't happen.
But first, let's do the numbers. You want some idea of how crazy China's growth is? China ate up 30% of the world's steel and nearly half of the world's cement in 2005. A quarter of the world's construction cranes loom over the city of Shanghai. 20 years ago, a Chinese highway was an oxymoron. Today, you can drive 21,000 miles of it, and that's expected to at least double by 2020. Airbus and Boeing estimate China is going to need somewhere between 1,800 and 2,600 new airliners over the next 20 years. American markets were closed for the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. The Shanghai Composite Index lists more than 800 companies, so it makes for a good stock measure on this side of the world. Today, the SSE fell 18 points, or 1.5%, to close at 1,202. We are live in Chongqing. That is a classical Chinese flute playing our numbers music, and you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, managing money with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Marketplace China reports are supported by Best Buy, building a global network to help enrich lives through technology, innovation, and opportunity. Best Buy. Marketplace is broadcasting live from China all this week. If you want to find out more, drop by our website. You'll find exclusive online features, including slideshows, a staff blog, and an interview with the musicians who created the Chinese version of our theme music. It's all at www.marketplace.org.
Here's a look at the special China edition of the Marketplace Datebook. Long before electronic trading, money learned to fly. In the early 7th century, Chinese tea merchants were paid with a paper IOU. They could exchange this so-called flying money for goods back home or use it to pay their taxes. Flying money was a forerunner to paper money and easier to haul around than heavy coins. By late century, merchants were using certificates of deposit to literally lighten their financial load. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal, and we are live this week from the 56th floor of the World Trade Center here in Chongqing, China. We are going to take a minute to check out the day's news. Turkey announced today a fourth person has died from bird flu, and in Indonesia, a 13-year-old girl died over the weekend from the H5N1 virus. That puts the worldwide death toll at 79, and it comes on the eve of a two-day international donor conference on bird flu Tuesday in Beijing. Marketplace's Jocelyn Ford has the story.
The World Bank is optimistic rich countries will pony up $1 billion+ to help poor countries prepare for a possible bird flu pandemic. Jim Adams says that's a tiny investment if you consider what a full-blown crisis might cost.
If there's an incident like SARS, which has a similar effect on world trade, you can see the impact of virtually $800 billion on the economy of a human pandemic.
Adams says raising money is the easy part. Getting developing nations to take effective precautions is harder. That's why the World Bank is earmarking some funds for destroying sick poultry.
If the government doesn't provide financing to cull all the animals, we know farmers who are very poor will try to get around that program.
Another complication, there's no consensus on how to avert a pandemic. For example, China has an ambitious but controversial plan to vaccinate its 14 billion poultry. Last year, such a program failed in China because the vaccinations were substandard or fake. In Beijing, I'm Jocelyn Ford for Marketplace.
The Iranian government sent a shiver through the oil markets today. The economy minister warned that any attempt to punish his country because of its nuclear research could lead to higher oil prices. Analysts interpreted that as a threat aimed at the six countries that met in London today. From the British capital, Stephen Beard reports.
Minister Davood Danesh Jafari said that UN sanctions against his country could drive up world energy prices. His meaning was patently clear, says Leo Drolos of the Centre for Global Energy Studies.
He's saying that if Iran is embargoed, then they might retaliate by restricting exports.
Iran is the world's fourth biggest oil exporter. The loss of its 2.5 million barrels a day would be devastating, says Drolos.
That suddenly like that would stretch the world to breaking point because we don't have that kind of spare capacity at this very moment.
The Iranians made their threat as officials from the five permanent members of the UN Security Council and Germany met here in London to figure out how to deal with Iran. Four of them, including the U.S., favor sanctions. But China and Russia are still reluctant to punish the Iranians. The standoff continues, unsettling the oil market and keeping prices high. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Ford announced today its sales in China jumped 46% last year. The car maker sold more than 82,000 cars here. In fact, Ford has a big factory right here in Chongqing, but the company is still far behind the competition. GM sold more than 660,000 cars to Chinese consumers last year. And this is Marketplace, live in Chongqing, China. Let me tell you what China's booming growth rate looks like on the ground. I'm within walking distance of the Yangtze River, and it is so grossly polluted that when I walk by, I can smell it. The grime and the soot in the air hides the mountain views and the sun. Those are just some of the signs of the hidden costs of China's explosive growth. We sent Sam Eaton out from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk to travel around China to tell that story.
Take a taxi ride along Shanghai's hip Wahai Road, and one thing is clear. In today's China, a lot of people have more money, and they want more stuff. P.T. Black is a trend hunter for the market research firm Jigsaw International.
We just drove by a FUBU. People are wandering up and down the street in name brands. There's Watson's pharmacies, everything. There are flat screen TVs blaring new ads from Pepsi, Turkish restaurants.
Black says China is making up for a half century of repressed capitalism and giving U.S. residents a run for their money as the Uber consumers of the world.
I used to live in New York, and whenever I go back, I'm so disappointed at how slow things are there. I mean, the same restaurant's been hot for almost a year. That's crazy here. It wouldn't happen.
He says young Chinese consumers have grown up in a time of frenzied economic growth. Laptops, cell phones, new houses, more cars, more roads, deeper ports, busier factories, more power plants, dams, nuclear reactors, subways. Beijing environmentalist Wen Bo says China's two-decade run of 10% plus economic growth isn't sustainable. He says China, and the rest of the planet for that matter, simply don't have enough natural resources to go around.
If China does not adopt environmental-friendly economy, they're going to consume the world over. China would have to compete in the world market for everything.
The costs of China's growth are visible in a different way in the countryside. Coal-fired power continues to fuel the economy, and a third of that coal comes from these hills surrounding Taiyuan, the provincial capital about 300 miles southwest of Beijing. It's among the world's 10 most polluted cities, and it shows. Black coal dust covers everything. Trees, cars, crops, even the people, like the Li family, one of the last to farm here. They tell me they worry the coal dust will harm their health. They say they're looking for someone to help them solve their problems. The rest of the land surrounding their farm is now used to store huge mountains of coal. Pollution means their harvest is growing smaller every year. So can the Lees turn to the Chinese government for help? They laugh at the question.
Can't. Even the government can't solve this problem.
But Li says life is better now under economic reforms. The mushrooms he sells at the local market provide enough income to send his oldest son to school. And that provides some hope for the future. Up the road, a battered cable tram carries coal miners to a mountaintop village, and yet another glaring cost of China's economic growth. In 2004, nearly 6,000 coal miners died on the job. That's compared to 27 in the U.S. Chinese industrial accidents took the lives of 130,000 people in the same year. It's a striking example of the haves and have-nots of progress. According to the World Bank, income inequality has nearly doubled since the early 80s. A farmer turned miner, also named Li, says just look at his boss's new fleet of Bentleys and Mercedes.
Someone is rich, but someone still poor.
And many of the poor are growing frustrated, which leads to another cost of all this growth, civil unrest. In 2004, more than 70,000 incidents of mass protests rocked China. That's about a sevenfold increase from a decade earlier. Environmental policy expert Ma Jun says for those with no political voice, resistance is becoming their only option.
When you deny people all these normal rights, you force them to take some of the very extreme way of action.
Ma says time is not on China's side. Sustaining the country's economic growth is becoming a dangerous balancing act. On the one side, there's the $2 trillion worth of stuff China makes every year, and the consumers who've come to depend on it. But then there are the unaccounted costs, the environmental damage, the health crisis, the social unrest. Keep pushing those costs aside, Ma says, and at some point, the weight has to shift. In Taiyuan, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Gather.com, where you can read what other listeners are saying and thinking about today's business news. You can share your perspective online at gather.com. The Work and Family Desk is supported by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting effective workplaces, which meet the needs of working parents and older workers. Coverage of Asia is supported by the Freeman Foundation. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
When I lived in Beijing in the late 90s, there was this vegetable stand I used to go to all the time. Bare floors, a couple of light bulbs, and a tarp for a roof. But the produce was clean, no small thing. Up on top was a big red sign that said Jenny Liu's. And when we decided to bring the program to China, I asked around about her, not really thinking she'd still be there. The whole neighborhood's been bulldozed to build a luxury hotel. But it turns out Jenny did all right for herself.
The closest parallel I can think of is you've walked into the Trader Joe's of China.
David Wolf's a marketing consultant in Beijing. He showed me one of the 8 stores that Jenny has now around the city, stocked to the gills with everything the expat could want.
We're walking past a rack filled with beverages. We've got everything here from locally packaged Nestle milk to Kool-Aid jammers. Capri Sun, okay? Imported. This isn't with Chinese labels on it. You've got different kinds of coffee. You've got, look at this.
Mozzarella cheese.
Mozzarella cheese. And not just one variety, but many varieties. Salami. Italian salamis, okay?
I asked Jenny how a peasant woman from Hubei province managed to do so well as the Chinese economy changed underneath her. Knowing what your customers want, she tells me. That's what helped her turn a vegetable stand into a multi-million dollar supermarket business in just 8 years. That is China. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Marketplace's producers include Ethan Lindsay and Brett Neely. Jane Lindholm directs the show. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Next time on the program, wealth in China is exploding. So how is all that money changing everything? I'm Kai Rizdal, live in Chongqing. Ming Tian Jian. We'll see you tomorrow. That's American Public Media, by the way.